Welcome to Oncology Today, Side Effects of Hormonal Therapy in Prostate Cancer, a program focused on the spectrum of toxicities with newer hormonal agents and their management. This is medical oncologist Dr. Neil Love. For this program, I met with Dr. Roberto Iacovelli, and to begin, I asked him to discuss new hormonal therapies in prostate cancer with a particular focus on side effects and management.
It's a great pleasure for me to share with you this review about the side effects of hormonal therapy in prostate cancer. Today, we are going to discuss about the type of new hormonal therapies used in prostate cancer, and we describe the main differences among new hormonal therapies. And after, we move on to classes of adverse events related to the use of these new hormonal therapies, with a special focus on the cardiovascular toxicity, metabolic syndrome, bone fractures, central nervous system toxicity, and the other miscellaneous toxicity. They may have a practical role for our practice. Prostate cancer is a very complex disease, with a minority of patients have initial diagnosis as a metastatic castration-sensitive prostate cancer, in which we have strong evidence supporting the use of abiraterone, apalutamide, or enzalutamide. But majority of patients have an initial diagnosis as a localized prostate cancer, and some of these patients may evolve to non-metastatic CRPC or metastatic castration-resistant prostate cancer. In this group of patients, we have strong evidence supporting the use of apalutamide, darolutamide, or enzalutamide for non-metastatic CRPC, and abiraterone or enzalutamide for metastatic CRPC. If we look at the mechanism of action of these drugs, abiraterone is classified as cytochrome 70 inhibitor, while apalutamide, darolutamide, and enzalutamide are classified as androgen receptor inhibitors. The mechanism of action of abiraterone is the inhibition of cytochrome 17 with the adrenal gland or within castration-resistant prostate cancer cells. This leads to a decreased level of testosterone, and as a consequence, we have an increased level of aldosterone. This is the reason because this patient should be treated with a concomitant low dose of prednisone to avoid some adverse events as hyperkalemia or hypertension. The androgen receptor inhibitors mainly act by the inhibition of the binding between testosterone and androgen receptor, or the translocation of the androgen receptor within the nucleus, and finally by the inhibition of the binding between the androgen receptor to androgen responsive elements within the tumor DNA that lead to the transcription of specific genes related to the tumor proliferation and tumor growth. Moving on, specific adverse events related to the use of new hormonal therapies, probably cardiovascular toxicity is one of the most important. But when we talk about cardiovascular toxicity, we have to consider that this is a too generic definition that includes but is not limited to arterial hypertension, myocardial infarction, or any type of cardiac rhythm alteration, such as atrial fibrillation or ventricular arrhythmias. This table well summarizes the evidence that correlates the use of androgen deprivation therapy to cardiovascular toxicity. And in this table, we have two groups of studies. The first group of studies includes a trial that compares androgen deprivation therapy to non-immediate androgen deprivation therapy. Both these studies were unable to find a statistically significant correlation between the use of androgen deprivation therapy and cardiovascular mortality. This is probably related to the fact that both populations in this study receive ADT at different time points. In the second group of studies, ADT was compared to a population that did not receive androgen deprivation therapy. In this case, we have an heterogeneous data with the SUN trial reporting increase in cardiovascular risk and in non-fatal cardiovascular disease, myocardial infarction or stroke, and some other trial we were unable to find this correlation. Considering a recent trial comparing relugolix, an oral LHRH antagonist to standard leuprolide in prostate cancer, was presented last year at ASCO meeting. This trial reported significant activity favoring the use of relugolix compared to leuprolide, But what this is very interesting is that this strategy using LHRH antagonist significantly decreased the risk of major adverse cardiovascular events. And this is very important because we can consider the use of this drug, especially for patients with previous cardiovascular disease. But what about the role of the new hormone therapies and the risk of cardiovascular events? About 3 years ago, we performed a systematic review and meta-analysis involving trials testing abiraterone or enzalutamide in prostate cancer. And by this meta-analysis, we were able to find that new hormonal therapies increase the risk of all grade cardiovascular toxicity by 36% and the risk of high grade toxicity by 84%. And looking at the difference between abiraterone or enzalutamide, we found that the risk was increased, especially for patients who receive abiraterone. Moving on arterial hypertension, we found that new hormone therapies increased the risk of arterial hypertension, all grades, and high-grade arterial hypertension by 2 times. And this risk was especially found to be higher for patients treated with enzalutamide. Moving from clinical studies to clinical practice, the Eudra Vigilance database collecting data for more than 30,000 patients treated with abiraterone or more than 40,000 patients treated with enzalutamide confirm this correlation between the use of a new hormonal treatment, especially abiraterone and enzalutamide, and the risk of vascular disorders and cardiac disorders. And considering this correlation, it's very interesting to report here what the authors of the PROSPER trial published last year on New England Journal of Medicine state about the use of this therapy, especially in patients with non-metastatic CRPC. This risk of adverse events should be evaluated, especially in patients with asymptomatic or slowly evolving tumors before initiating this treatment. And if this treatment has been initiated, this patient should be followed closely for the surge of a new adverse event.
Could I just clarify one thing before you go forward? You said when you talked about that analysis and you looked at abiraterone and enzalutamide, how much was it increased? Could you give a more specific number in terms of what the risk increase was with each of those separately, like abiraterone as opposed to enzalutamide? What are the numbers?
This table shows the risk of cardiac toxicity, whole grade toxicity, was 41% for abiraterone, and it was exactly the same for enzalutamide for whole grade toxicity. But if we look to high grade toxicity, this was increased by 2 times for abiraterone and only by 32% for enzalutamide. This is interesting because patients treated with abiraterone have an increased risk of high grade cardiac events when treated with abiraterone.
So just to clarify though, why do you think it is that abiraterone leads to more than enzalutamide mechanistically?
To be honest, we don't know what is the mechanism of action of this different toxicity. But we know that abiraterone is especially related to rhythm alteration, and the androgen inhibitors, enzalutamide, apalutamide, or darolutamide, are especially related to arterial hypertension. Then for these two different classes of new hormonal therapies, we have a different toxicity profile. And then when we have to choose between these two, we have to consider that. And this choice should be based on previous patient comorbidities and should be also evaluated considering the patient and to discuss, should be discussed with our patient.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Metabolic syndrome is another important toxicity related to the cardiovascular one. And even if metabolic syndrome is well defined by the WHO criteria, in the clinical practice, this is generally evaluated by the increase of body mass index. And this review is a very great work that reported different group of studies and correlates the body mass index with the risk to die for prostate cancer. In the first group of studies, authors correlate the body mass index to the risk to die for prostate cancer in healthy patients. And with the second group of studies, the authors found an increase in the risk to die for prostate cancer in patients with previous diagnosis of prostate cancer. And the last group of studies, they were able to find a significant correlation between the body mass index and the risk of a biochemical recurrence in patients with a previous diagnosis of prostate cancer. These slides show very well the vicious cycle between the use of new hormonal therapies or the use of androgen deprivation therapy that lead to metabolic syndrome. Metabolic syndrome is related to a condition of a general and systemic inflammation, and some cytokines in this inflammation may support tumor growth. And of course, tumor growth requires the new hormonal therapies that may support further metabolic syndrome. If we look at the patient treated with the abiraterone, in our clinical practice, obviously we have a patient with a previous diagnosis of metabolic syndrome, and this patient, when receive abiraterone, have an increased risk of decompensated diabetes when compared to patient without metabolic syndrome at baseline. But if we move to patient without metabolic syndrome at baseline, these have a similar risk of cardiovascular events compared to patients with metabolic syndrome, and 12% of patients may have a new diagnosis of metabolic syndrome. And patients treated with first-line treatment with abiraterone or enzalutamide, those with metabolic syndrome have a shorter overall survival and shorter progression-free survival when compared to patients who did not. And this is because probably metabolic syndrome supports the tumor growth. Considering that the European Association of Urology guideline recommend that all patients that need long-term androgen deprivation therapy or patients who need new hormonal therapies should be checked for diabetes, should be referred to a cardiologist, especially if greater than 65 or if they have a previous history of cardiovascular disease. But what is very important is that all patients taking ADT should be advised of modifying their lifestyle factors with a better diet, with more vegetable, more fruits, more exercise, and smoking cessation. Bone fractures are another important toxicity for patients treated with androgen deprivation therapy and new hormonal therapies. We know that the risk of bone fractures increase by age. This is well known for female patients, but is also important for the male one. And this table well summarizes all studies who investigate the correlation between the use of androgen deprivation therapy and cancer treatment-induced bone loss. Considering that a randomized phase 3 trial tested the use of denosumab 60 milligrams every 6 months to placebo in patients who receive androgen deprivation therapy for non-metastatic castration-sensitive prostate cancer. This study was able to find that denosumab significantly increased the bone mineral density compared to baseline and compared to placebo, and denosumab significantly decreased the risk of bone fractures at 1, 2, and 3 years after treatment starts. But it's very interesting to analyze the risk of bone fractures in a special situation of patients without bone metastasis, but who receive ADT for a long time. These are non-metastatic CRPC, and 3 randomized phase 3 trials recently tested the use of a new hormonal therapies in this special population. And if we look at the incidence of fractures, these were significantly increased, especially for patients treated with apalutamide and enzalutamide. We have to consider that this is accrued date and is not related to the exposition of treatment that is obviously longer for patients treated with active treatment compared to placebo. Moving on, castration-resistant prostate cancer, we have a strong evidence supporting the use of bone-protecting agents. The first one is a randomized phase 3 trial that tested zoledronic acid over placebo in patients with a metastatic CRPC. And this study found as zoledronic acid was able to increase the time to first skeletal release event. And then it became a standard of treatment for this patient. But few years later, another trial tested denosumab over zoledronic acid in a similar population and found that denosumab was able to increase further the time to first skeletal release events with an 18% reduction of the risk of bone fracture. This is a very important data. Considering that the same guideline recommend that all patients who need long-term androgen deprivation therapy should be evaluated for the risk of bone fractures by using a WHO FRAX tool available for free on internet. The same patient should be receive an evaluation of bone mineral density at baseline. And we have to consider two opposite situations, obesity and sarcopenia, are related to an increased risk of bone fractures in prostate cancer patients. Central nervous system toxicity are a very original toxicity. The mechanism of this toxicity is related to the role of testosterone in cognitive function and to the different ability of new hormonal therapies to pass the blood-brain barrier. If we look at the available phase 3 clinical trial, known reported toxicity, and this Aquarius phase 4 trial conducted in Denmark, France, and UK first report a significant difference between abiraterone and enzalutamide, with patients taking enzalutamide have a significant decrease in cognitive function compared to those who were treated with abiraterone. Another toxicity is the seizure. This was described for the first time in patients treated with enzalutamide for metastatic castration-resistant prostate cancer, even if the increasing amount of data in prostate cancer for enzalutamide or for other new hormonal therapies seems to decrease this risk. And prospective trial testing more than 400 patients treated with enzalutamide and at least one risk factor for seizure, including medication that lowered the seizure threshold, history of stroke or history of seizure, reported only 7 events of seizure in more than 400 patients, including this study, with an incidence of confirmed seizure of 2.6 per 100 patients a year. Finally, miscellaneous toxicity includes some toxicity important for our clinical practice. One of the most strange toxicity is the risk of falls. This has been reported in the first clinical trial testing new hormone treatment for prostate cancer. This has not been related to the cerebrovascular events. Then the mechanism of action is not completely understood. But from this table, it is well evident that this risk is increased in patients taking new hormonal therapies. And this patient and caregiver should be informed about this risk to prevent it. About hypothyroidism, this is a different toxicity that has been described and reported for the first time in patients treated with apalutamide and is very specific for apalutamide. And then in our clinical practice, patients taking apalutamide should be screened with TSH during treatment. Finally, fatigue is the last adverse event, but probably is the most important by the patient point of view. And if we look at this table, about 15 to 25% of patients have fatigue in the control arm of the major phase 3 trial. This is probably related to the cancer-related fatigue. But if we move to patients who receive active treatment, this fatigue is increased. This is probably related to the role of testosterone to help the physical activity. In conclusion, new hormonal therapies increase the incidence of cardiovascular adverse events. ADT and new hormonal therapies can worsen the bone loss and cause bone fractures. A new hormonal therapy can increase the cognitive worsening, and special attention should be paid, especially for elderly patients, for these adverse events. But please, we have to remember that new hormonal therapies have significantly improved quality of life and overall survival for patients treated with prostate cancer. And then the evaluation of pros and cons should be performed in all patients, but especially in those with asymptomatic or slowly evolving tumors. The first case is a 73 years old man with a previous history of arterial hypertension. And this patient was diagnosed in November 2017 for metastatic castration-sensitive prostate cancer, Gleason 8, low volume of disease. And he starts androgen deprivation therapy, and PSA after 3 months showed us a good biochemical response. After 3 years of treatment, the PET colon and PSA show us a progression of disease, and the general clinical conditions of this patient were good. He had pain and was classified as a moderately symptomatic patient, and the PSA doubling time was less than 3 months. The question now is, what is the best choice first-line treatment for castration-resistant prostate cancer in this patient? To start a new hormonal therapy with abiraterone or enzalutamide, or we can start treatment with chemo and especially with docetaxel. Generally, we perform for this patient cardiological screening, and the ACG showed us that some P waves were not followed by the QRS. This is a special condition called Mabitz 2, and it's linked to severe bradycardia and progression to the third degree of heart block. And the risk of a systole is around 35% per year in this patient. Looking at the FDA and EMA product recommendation and the risk of a cardiac arrhythmia, we have that both FDA and EMA reported a small increase in the QT prolongation and the risk of tertiary points for patients treated with enzalutamide and abiraterone, while the risk of a ventricular arrhythmia was reported for docetaxel only in case this treatment was combined with other chemotherapy such as doxorubicin and 5-fluorouracil. Moreover, a recent publication showed us that patients with previous cardiovascular comorbidities start first-line treatment with abiraterone or enzalutamide have an increased risk to die for this cardiovascular disease within the 6 months after the start of treatment or to be hospitalized for any type of cardiovascular disease. And this data was especially true for patients treated with abiraterone. Considering that we decide to treat this patient with docetaxel, but probably enzalutamide 2 is a good option for this patient.
Could I just ask, would a pacemaker be a consideration in a patient like that?
Yes. The pacemaker was considered for this patient, but obviously we need to start to treatment. And this patient was referred to a cardiologist for a pacemaker. And after that, we decided to start chemo.
Because I noticed there that you said, I think there was a 35, risk of asystole is 35%. So if a pacemaker had been put in, would that have changed the way you approach it?
Probably this could be reconsidered, this approach. And in this case, in case of pacemaker, probably enzalutamide would be a good option, but not abiraterone, because the risk of rhythm alteration is great for abiraterone.
Right. So just to clarify, though, if this patient, same exact patient, had no cardiac problems at all, what would your most likely treatment have been?
In this specific case, this is a patient with mildly symptomatic tumor. Doubling time is very low, the PSA doubling time. This is a patient that potentially may receive any type of treatment, probably considering the low toxicity profile for new hormone therapies, this patient will be treated with abiraterone or enzalutamide in case of no cardiovascular disease. The second case is a 62-year-old man with a medical history characterized by rheumatoid arthritis, arterial hypertension, a previous infection for ACV virus. This patient had a diagnosis of a prostate cancer, Gleason 9, and subsequent PET colon reported single bone mets, lymph node metastasis, and the uptake on prostate gland. The general clinical conditions of this patient were very good, no pain, no symptoms. The body mass index was 26. And we decided to start androgen deprivation therapy. But in this case, obviously, the question is what we can do more for this patient. Use docetaxel or use new hormonal therapy? When we consider a patient planned for long-term androgen deprivation therapy, we say that this patient should be evaluated for bone mineral density and should be evaluated for the risk of bone fractures. And in this case, it is very useful to analyze, has the risk of bone fractures increased if we consider a previous comorbidity of rheumatoid arthritis, and if we consider the possibility to treat this patient with abiraterone and low doses of prednisone, this risk can increase from 3.5 to 5.8% for major osteoporotic. And the risk of a hip fractures can increase from less than 1% to 1.4%. Based on this, we decide to continue with the androgen deprivation therapy, even if this patient has not considered, has not classified as an high volume or an high risk patient. And then we add to androgen deprivation therapy denosumab 60 milligrams every 6 months and cholecalciferol. And now, after 3 years of treatment, the body weight of this patient increased by 6 kilos, and the blood test shows an increase in total cholesterol, reduce of the HDL, an increase on triglycerides. And this led to an increased risk of any cardiac events from 10% to baseline to 80% now. This is probably a good case showing us that patients who need a long-term ADT should be evaluated for the bone health, and during treatment with ADT should be evaluated for the risk of metabolic syndrome. The last case is a 78 years old man with a previous diagnosis of arterial hypertension, and this patient has a long history of prostate cancer. He received radical radiotherapy and short-term androgen deprivation therapy for intermediate-risk prostate cancer in 2007. And after biochemical recurrence, starts ADT that was continued in an intermittent fashion until now. The last PSA showed us an increase in this value, and the PET colon confirmed the pathological uptake on prostate. This patient can be classified as a non-metastatic CRPC with a PSA doubling time that is greater than 10 months. General conditions were very good, and patient had no symptoms related to the cancer and no significant comorbidities. Then, what is the best approach for this patient? Starting a new hormonal therapy with abiraterone, apalutamide, enzalutamide, or darolutamide too, or to consider a local procedure or active surveillance. Initially, we decided to consider a local procedure, but this were excluded because of the risk of local adverse events. And finally, we decided to continue only with active surveillance for now.
One thing I wanted to ask you about, the use of new hormonal therapies in different situations based on what's approved. And so, for example, for metastatic castrate-sensitive, you have abiraterone, apalutamide, enza, M0, apa, dara, enza, MCRPC, abiraterone, enzalutamide. Putting aside reimbursement and regulatory issues, from your point of view, can these agents all be used in all these spaces, or do you believe that physicians should sort of stick with the data and approvals?
We have a very similar data. Results in terms of the efficacy are very close each other, even if now probably a good safety profile has been reported for darolutamide compared to the other drugs. And probably this different toxicity profile should be counted in the evaluation, the choice of this treatment, the reimbursement for this drug. This mechanism is very different from US and European Union. In European Union, we are obliged to use specific drug in their indication. Probably in US, you are more it's possible to use these drugs in other clinical contexts. To be honest, the safety profile of this drug are very similar, and the activity of these drugs have not been tested in different contexts, but I can expect that apalutamide could be active, for example, in patients with metastatic CRPC. There are not reason, because the mechanism of action is similar, and then it's a possibility. But the problem is why we have to consider apalutamide instead of enzalutamide or abiraterone in the context of metastatic castration-resistant prostate cancer. If the answer is the safety, is a good reason.
Can you talk a little bit about what we know about the secondary effects of androgen deprivation therapy? And from a clinical point of view, what are some of the things you think about when you start a patient on ADT, and what kind of plan do you put in place for them?
This patient should be evaluated exactly as this patient who started new hormonal therapies, and the evaluation of bone health at baseline with a bone mineral density. This patient should be considered for the start of denosumab, 60 milligrams every 6 months. And evaluation of any cardiovascular pre-existing disease should be done to test the risk for any other events. And this patient should be also evaluated for cholesterol, for metabolic syndrome during treatment with ADT. I can say that the message is the same. This patient should be evaluated at the same manner if they receive ADT or if they receive the ADT plus a new hormone therapy.
I'm curious what we know. We have three different options, LHRH agonist. We have an antagonist, both parenteral and now oral. Can you kind of compare what we know about those three approaches to ADT as it relates to secondary complications?
There are some meta-analyses that compare LHRH antagonists to LHRH agonists, especially for the risk of cardiovascular disease. It is generally considered that patients with a previous cardiovascular comorbidities should be treated with LHRH antagonists because these were considered safer compared to the LHRH agonist.
Let's talk about new hormonal therapies and talk about what we know in terms of, again, adverse events, beginning with cardiovascular toxicities. Can you discuss that, please?
Cardiovascular toxicity is a very large definition. And in this case, we have to consider the risk of arterial hypertension, myocardial infarction, or any other type of cardiac rhythm alteration. We performed systematic review and meta-analysis 3 years ago to test the incidence of cardiovascular events in patients treated with abiraterone or enzalutamide. And we were able to find that this risk of any cardiovascular events was increased in patients treated with the new hormonal therapies, both for all-grade and high-grade toxicity. And similarly, the risk of all-grade and high-grade arterial hypertension was found to be increased with the use of the new hormonal therapies. And then this supports the correlation between the use of the new hormonal therapies and the risk of and the cardiovascular toxicity. And then patients who need new hormonal therapies should be evaluated at baseline for any pre-existing cardiovascular disease, and they should be followed during treatment to consider or to evaluate new adverse events and to manage these adverse events.
Could you talk specifically about what we know in terms of abiraterone as opposed to enzalutamide in terms of the impact on cardiovascular events and specifically the events that you were discussing? Hypertension, MI, et cetera.
Yes, what we know is if we look at the meta-analysis we performed, probably abiraterone is characterized by a greater risk of cardiovascular events, and enzalutamide is especially characterized by the risk of arterial hypertension. And this, obviously, we have two different toxicity profiles for abiraterone and for androgen receptor inhibitors that should be accounted when we have to choose this treatment for our patient.
Let's talk about the issue of metabolic syndrome and newer hormonal therapies. Could you discuss what we know about that?
patients taking new hormonal therapies have an increased risk of metabolic syndrome. There are evidence that correlate the use of ADT to metabolic syndrome, but there are also new evidence, especially for patients treated with abiraterone, that may have an increased risk of metabolic syndrome. We presented studies in which patients without metabolic syndrome at baseline may have a 12% increase in the risk of metabolic syndrome during treatment with abiraterone. Moreover, patients with metabolic syndrome have a shorter overall survival and progression-free survival while receiving abiraterone or enzalutamide for first-line treatment of castration-resistant prostate cancer. Then, metabolic syndrome should be managed for two reasons. The first one is the risk of cardiovascular events, and the second one is the prognostic role for patients with CRPC. We have to manage metabolic syndrome by the use of some drugs that help us to manage a level of cholesterol and to manage arterial hypertension. It is not so easy to recommend physical activity in a patient with prostate cancer. But we know, especially for those patients with asymptomatic tumors, we have a long time on ADT, a long time of new hormonal therapy. We expect a long duration of treatment. We have to support these patients to change their lifestyle. This is the first step. And the second one is the use of specific drug to manage metabolic syndrome.
Can you talk about the impact of hormonal therapy on bone and bone fractures?
Yes, we know that ADT have a role in cancer and treatment-induced bone loss. This is well proved in previous prospective studies. And now we have some evidence supporting how new hormonal therapies may increase the risk of bone fractures. This is especially true if we look at patients with a non-metastatic CRPC. This is a patient who received for a long time androgen deprivation therapy, in which the addiction of a new hormonal therapy significantly increased the risk of bone fractures compared to placebo. This type of bone fractures are very different because this is not pathologic fractures, are not related to the presence of metastasis, but are considered stress fractures. And this is different physiology, and this is the evidence that these fractures are related to the use of new hormonal therapies and ADT.
And what do we know about the impact of both zoledronic acid and denosumab in patients on ADT and new hormonal therapies?
We know that this patient should be treated with bone-protecting agents, zoledronic acid or denosumab. We have a very interesting trial, is the ERA-223 trial, in which patients treated with radium-223 and abiraterone were compared to those treated with abiraterone alone. And the patient who received the combination was reported a significant increase in stress in bone fractures, stress bone fractures. And in this trial, the use of bone protective agents was less than 40% of patients. This supports that the use of this treatment for preventing bone loss, for preventing bone events in patients with and without bone metastasis. We have to consider that we have two different possibilities to use denosumab. This is 60 milligrams every 6 months for patients with metastatic castration-sensitive prostate cancer or non-metastatic castration-sensitive prostate cancer. And in patients with a metastatic CRPC, we can use denosumab every month, zoledronic acid every month.
Do you use this in all patients? In your talk, you put up a slide with the recommendations about how to evaluate patients in terms of bone mineral densities, et cetera. Do you go through that type of evaluation, or do you just go ahead and put them on bone protective therapy as long as they're going to be on some kind of hormonal treatment?
The initial evaluation is especially useful if you want to evaluate during treatment the bone health. But probably because we know that ADT or new hormonal therapies are related to the risk of bone fractures, this patient should be treated in the same manner with the use of bone protecting agents.
How do you decide between denosumab and ZDA?
This depends on the clinical activity. We have stronger evidence supporting the use of denosumab over zoledronic acid, but we well know that zoledronic acid is less expensive compared to denosumab.
Can you talk a little bit about CNS toxicities and newer hormonal therapies?
CNS is a new toxicity we have with the use of a new hormonal therapy. And the first type of CNS toxicity was the risk of seizures. And this was reported for the use of enzalutamide in CRPC. But if we look at the new trial evaluating enzalutamide or other new hormonal treatment for patients with prostate cancer, this incidence, this risk was reduced. And this is very important, even if because prospective evaluation confirmed the safety of enzalutamide and the risk of seizure is very low, less than 2.6% of cases each year. And another type of central nervous toxicity, strange toxicity, is the risk of falls. This has not been related to the central vascular events. And we don't know the mechanism of this toxicity, but this was reported in about 5 to 10% of patients treated with the new hormonal therapies. And in this case, patients should be educated to prevent this type of toxicity. And then the last one is the cognitive impairment. We know that this type of toxicity is more evident for patients treated with the new hormonal therapies, especially androgen receptor inhibitors compared to abiraterone. We have an initial issue is that large phase 3 trials have not reported this toxicity. And this was described initially in clinical practice. And a few prospective trials assessed this toxicity. We discussed about the Aquarius trial. This is a phase 4 prospective evaluation conducted in patients treated with abiraterone or enzalutamide and confirmed significant decrease in cognitive function in patients treated with enzalutamide.
What about the issue of fatigue?
Fatigue is probably the most important adverse event. It's the first adverse event reported by all patients. And the mechanism of action of fatigue is probably related to the cancer, but it is also related to the low level of testosterone. We know that testosterone is very important for muscular activity and probably in patients taking new hormonal treatment and anti-androgen treatment may have an increase in fatigue. What is important is that this patient should be recommended for the increase of their physical activity. This is a paradox, but this is very useful to improve the fatigue, to decrease fatigue for this patient, to improve quality of life.
So I've heard people, I think, speculate that fatigue is a CNS effect. Patients describe it as fatigue, but I've heard people say this is an effect in the brain. Any thoughts about that?
Yeah, this is a possible correlation, but to be honest, central nervous system toxicity and fatigue are not strictly related because fatigue is a physical fatigue and CNS toxicity is generally in the cognitive function.
But I think you said that your thinking was the fatigue was related to decreased testosterone?
Yes, probably. It's a possibility because testosterone supports the physical activity. And it could be a possible correlation between fatigue and activity of new hormonal therapies.
You mentioned in your talk hypothyroidism, which is something I hadn't heard about. Can you talk a little bit about what we know about that?
Yes, this is not a very frequent adverse event, but it is very specific for patients treated with apalutamide. We have data from trial with apalutamide that confirm this type of toxicity. That is generally in the low grade, grade 1 or grade 2. Sometimes require the use of a hormone replacement, but this is generally could be managed easily. But we have to remember to test this patient for hypothyroidism. This is the important message.
Anything else you want to say about this topic? Any areas of current or future research in this area that you want to comment on?
If we look at the recent ASCO GU, where was reported a trial, the ACHES trial, that compared the combination of abiraterone plus apalutamide to abiraterone it was well evident that some toxicity increased with this combination. Then probably in the future trial, we have to consider if new strategies involving new hormonal therapies should evaluate the toxicity for our patients. If we look at the trial with, for instance, plus a new hormonal therapist, in this new trial, patients are obliged to start the bone protective agents because we know that bone should be protected in this case.
I was just thinking about a patient who got high-dose androgens, metastatic disease, multiple prior therapies, 90-year-old patient. Any experience with this bipolar androgen therapy? And what do you see there in terms of secondary effects?
I have not experience on the use of androgen in patients with CRPC. This strategy is very interesting, but in my opinion, should be limited to patients with asymptomatic CRPC, because the risk for patients with symptomatic or more advanced disease is to support the tumor growth and the worsening of tumor-related symptoms.
I was wondering how you approach men who have hot flashes, that specific issue. What are some of the ways you try to mitigate that?
This is a very frequent toxicity reported by patients treated with ADT. There are some evidence supporting the use of antidepressants to manage this, but my preferred approach is acupuncture. I have a very good result in my patients with acupuncture, yes.
Interesting. What about insomnia, lack of sleep?
It's very difficult to, especially during the first phase of treatment, to discriminate between some related to the, as an adverse event, or related to the anxiety, related to the new diagnosis of cancer. And then I try to manage this with psychological support for my patients.
Interesting. What about sexual issues that occur during hormonal therapy?
Yeah. Obviously, majority of these patients have a lot of problem about the sexual function. But I learned that the first thing is to inform this patient that the use of specific drug used to improve the sexual function are not dangerous in terms of the control of tumor. This is the first message to give to our patients. And obviously, if patients need or he wants to improve their sexual activity, I generally refer this to a neurologist.
This concludes our program. Special thanks to Dr. Iacovelli, and thank you for listening. This is Dr. Neil Love for Oncology Today.